This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Coming up on today's show, millions of Legos turned into works of art. We'll have a look at the art of the brick now showing at the Museum Center. Joining me first in the studio as we take a look at year-end tax and financial strategies, Foster and Motley financial planner and shareholder David Niedenaber and financial planner Joe Patterson, along with Chris DeSimio, who's a financial advisor with Wells Fargo Advisors in Cincinnati. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Dave, Joe, and Chris, thanks for being here today.
It's always a pleasure to be here.
Always a pleasure.
Always. A distinct pleasure.
That's good to hear, Chris. But we've got some good economic numbers that came out today, don't we?
Well, you wouldn't know it to look at the market, but in fact, we got the consumer confidence figures reported this morning. They were up over the prior month. And retail sales, if you strip out gasoline, up 0.5%, about double what the street had been expecting. And yet, with the Fed meeting next week and investors not quite sure what they're going to say and how they're going to say it, there's just enough uncertainty ahead of a weekend to pretty much cause buyers to zip up their checkbooks and let the sellers have their way.
Yeah. What role is oil playing in this, Chris? I keep hearing about how oil is just wreaking havoc on the market.
Well, there are a couple things that are happening, of course, with oil. Two of the Dow 30 components, of course, are Exxon and Chevron. And so being higher priced stocks in terms of their absolute number, a drop in one of those shares ripples a little more deeply throughout that kind of narrowly based index. But it's raising concerns about what it says for the health of the overall economy. Is it true that demand is slowing? Is China going into a recession? These are all the kinds of things that almost like at the end of one of those Sherman and Peabody or Rocky and Bullwinkle shows from when you're a little kid, you would hear, will this happen? Will that happen? And in a market that's just uncertain, then you have, again, markets hate uncertainty. And so it's not knowing where it's going to end, not knowing what's really out there. But the fact is, if you look at natural gas, for example, it's gone from a high of $9 down to $2. Who would have thought a few years ago that you'd be able to fill up your tank for less than $2? And yet, mm-hmm. There we are. And so that should be good news for the retailers. It should be. But then people are worried about, my gosh, it's so warm outside. It's here we are, December 11th, and it's in the 60s, going to be 70 tomorrow. The White Christmas Parade in Augusta, Kentucky, probably not going to have snow. Probably not going to have snow tomorrow. So these are all these uncertainties. And so oil is, it's influencing the market. And it could be a discussion for later on today about where to find it, how to harvest tax losses and that kind of thing. But it's been an interesting week.
It has. Well, if you've got a long-term perspective, this is all but, a blip on the radar screen?
Well, it's easy to say. But if you own good quality instruments and you are reasonably sure that the dividend is safe, then you think back to, 7 years ago when shares of blue chip companies, some of which were headquartered right here in Cincinnati, who saw their share prices get cut in half, only the dividends were never cut. And in fact, the dividends continued to grow. And so if what you're looking for is a rising income stream, then situations such as this really present an opportunity to pick up some bargains.
Well, we have David Niedenaber and Joe Patterson from Foster and Motley. They're joining us today to talk about year-end strategies, financial strategies that you can take to cut your taxes and save yourself some money. So, Dave, I'm sort of wondering, is there like a top thing on your list of things that people should do this time of year when they're looking at their finances?
Well, probably at the top of my mind is simply time. Time's starting to run short. There's 20 days left until the end of the year, and this is the time that you can make changes to what your tax situation looks like. Everyone likes to think of taxes as an April 15th kind of exercise, but by that time you're writing a history book. So this is really the time of year where you can take the proactive steps to understand where you're at and some changes you may make over the next 20 days.
What's the first proactive step you would take?
I think it's first you need to know where you're at. Before you can decide what changes need to happen, you need to know what does your pay stub look like? Have you had ample withholding on your wages? If you're an investor, what does your portfolio look like? What kind of income is it generating? What kind of income did it generate last year? And take a deeper dive into the investments that you hold. So if you hold a company, as Chris was describing, that produces energy and it's been beaten up, Well, now's the time that you may want to harvest a loss and have that benefit your tax return by selling that position and buying back into something else.
You know, I've heard that expression, harvest a loss. Explain what that means.
Most simply, it's making lemonade out of lemons. Okay. No one likes to buy a position and watch it lose value. But it can have a value to your tax return. So if you've had some successful investments and you've sold those at a gain, you can offset those gains by selling some things that have provided losses.
What's the basic formula then? It's you net out short-term versus short-term and long-term versus long-term, and then there's an excess carry forward. Has that changed at all?
Well, I don't know that I even passed that on my CPA exam as far as how they offset. It's kind of complex, but the short story is you can basically get to zero for a capital gain. You can zero it out, and then you get just a small marginal benefit, so up to a $3,000 loss that you can take.
Can be offset against ordinary income.
Well, so total, the $3,000.
Right. So if you have $10,000 of gains but $13,000 of losses, then you can the losses generally offset the gains. Mm-hmm. And the extra $3,000 can reduce your ordinary income.
Correct. And if you have more than $3,000 of losses, you can carry that to the next year.
Okay.
So this time of year, it's not a bad idea if you have a stock that's doing badly to say it might be time to part company with it, right?
It's one of the few benefits that comes from losing money.
513-419-7100. You can also email talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Joe, realistically, somebody who's following that strategy of harvesting their losses, who would want to do that? Is there a certain tax bracket where it's more beneficial, or is it just beneficial across the board?
Yeah, I mean, obviously that's something that would be more beneficial the higher the tax bracket. So depending on your marginal level of income, your capital gains rate on any gains from sales of securities, and we're talking about long-term gains here, so
that's securities held more than a year.
Will be anywhere from 0 up to 20% at the federal rate. You might also get hit with an additional 3.8% on surtax depending on your level of income. So for folks who are in very high income brackets, these strategies are more valuable dollar per dollar. So anytime we can take a loss at the end of the year for those folks, it makes sense to do so.
Yeah, it's in the 460 or so of taxable income range for a joint filer where that 20% long-term gain rate kicks in. For most normal people, it's 15. And for many people, it's 10, is it not?
That's right. Yeah, depending on the tax bracket, 10 to 15% is a good number. Don't forget, you'll pay state income tax to the extent you live in a state. Mm-hmm. So figure 5% for state of Ohio. So there's some value to taking those losses at year end. And if you have carryovers, we can use them in the following calendar year. Remember, those are for securities held in taxable portfolios. So if we're talking about retirement plans, your losses are what they are. They stay inside that account.
Yeah. The risk is, of course, that if you were to, I guess, pull a name out of thin air, this is not a recommendation, but let's say that you had invested in Facebook, as an example, when it first went public a few years back. And by 6 months into it, as the year end approached, it was down in value. And so if you sell something to take the loss, I think Facebook came out of the upper 30s. And then it was trading in the mid to upper teens at some point. And so if you were to say, well, okay, I'm going to book the loss, then you have to figure out two things. Do you get back in at all? And secondly, if you'd get back in, when do you get back in? Because Facebook now is trading over 100. So the risk is being out of something. And that's where you run into the so-called wash rules, where you have to stay out of it for how many days?
Sure. So you have to stay. So if I make a sale, let's talk about Exxon as an example, you know, stock that's taken a hit this year with energy prices. I sell my Exxon today. I have to not buy it back for 30 days. So on that 31st day, I go ahead, buy that stock back. I'm in the clear. Anytime less than that, I've violated what we call the wash sale rule, meaning that loss I took on that security will not be valid as far as IRS rules go. And it will carry over to my new basis.
Yeah, and there are also people who would try to get around the wash sale rule by saying, okay, I really like the story, whether it's Exxon or you name it. So I'm going to sell it in my taxable account. in my individual account, but I've got this joint account over here. I'll just buy it back there, or I'll sell it. I'll buy it back in my IRA, and that can that disqualify it?
Certainly, Joe? It certainly can. So one good example Dave and I were talking about is Procter & Gamble. Procter & Gamble was a $92 stock earlier this year. We're floating in the upper 70s. It's been lower.
It got into the mid-60s back
right,
in the
end of
summer.
Right, got into the mid-60s. So I can sell my Procter & Gamble and buy, say, Kimberly-Clark. Very similar type company, same industry. Won't trigger the wash sale rule. But if I were to buy Procter & Gamble in my IRA 2 days later, the IRS doesn't like that. It's going to hit my trigger.
And this is why it's always important to check this out with your own trusted tax advisors and financial advisors, because isn't it also true then that the window used to only apply after you did a sale, but now it even applies before the sale?
That's correct. Yeah. So you can't game the system, so to speak, by pre-buying something you might want to have as your replacement, then selling it. So it's something to be aware of and absolutely discuss with your advisor, whether your tax advisor or financial advisor.
513-419-7100. If you have any questions for us, give us a call. You can also email talk at WVXU.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Dave, you know, I've heard this is the time of year to work on maxing out your retirement contributions. Now, how much can you put into a traditional IRA or a 401k?
Well, IRAs and 401ks have different rules. So for folks under 50 into an IRA, you can put in $5,000 per year. And there's different forms of IRAs. There's deductible IRAs, non-deductible, and Roth IRAs. For the folks that are over 50, that limit goes up an additional $1,000. You get up to $6,000 into an IRA. 401k rules, it starts at $18,000 for everyone. And then for folks over 50, you can do a $6,000 catch-up, so a total of $24,000. And the 401k has to happen before the end of the year. So 12/31 is the last deadline to contribute money into a 401k. IRA, you actually have up until April 15th to make those contributions for 2015.
Okay, so what if you're talking about some pretty big figures there, and they always tell you max out your contribution. What if you can't afford to max it out? Is it still worth trying to put as much in as you possibly can?
Well, you always want to look at a company match. You don't want to leave free money on the table. So if your company's going to match the first 6% that you put in, then you want to do everything possible to at least contribute 6% of your pay, because the return on that is enormous depending on the percentage the company is going to match. It's an instant return on your money.
Now, what about the Roth IRA or the Roth 401k? I mean, there's no upfront tax deduction, but is it still worth this time of year considering putting extra money into those as well?
Yeah, a Roth is a fantastic savings tool. But like most things, there's no blanket answer for does a Roth make sense. The simple math that you want to look at when considering a Roth is what kind of tax rate am I paying now? And what kind of tax rate do I think I'll pay in the future? Which, of course, is an impossible question to answer. But if you're early on in your career and you suspect that your tax rate's going to go up in the future, then it may make a lot of sense to leave the current tax benefit on the table, put it into a Roth, and be able to take that money out tax-free in retirement.
You know, another thing that has become really popular lately is for people who are retiring, they may find themselves in a lower tax bracket. And that 15% tax bracket extends all the way up to just around $75,000 of taxable income for a couple filing jointly. And that's the number after you've taken your exemptions and your deductions, whether you can itemize. So that's, you can have a pretty good sized income and still be in a 15% tax bracket. And frequently, you have many couples who are retired who are enjoying a nice, comfortable income, but who are in a 15% tax bracket. Maybe they have a taxable income of, after all their deductions and exemptions, of roughly $50,000. But their children, happily, are successful in life, and they are in very high brackets. And so it's counterintuitive. But frequently, you'll see people asking about whether they should convert, not make a contribution out of pocket, because they can't do that since they're retired, but can you convert part of your former retirement plan that's never been taxed, at least up to an amount that will let you sneak in just under that window and still have as much taxed at 15% instead of 25% as possible, that keeps more money on your family balance sheet as opposed to needlessly sending money away to the Internal Revenue Service at your children's higher tax brackets, because when they take that money out, they will inherit it and pay taxes on a traditional IRA in their bracket.
Yeah, what you described is a fantastic technique. There's really two components going on there. The first is that you're taking a proactive look at your taxes at the end of the year to know exactly how much room you have until you go up into the next tax bracket. So that's something that everyone should be doing this time of year. The second component to Chris's example is an estate component. That, you know, it's great to inherit money, but if you can inherit money that doesn't have a tax liability tied to it, even better. So if you inherit a Roth, you can take out dollar for dollar for spending with none in taxes.
Now, the IRS doesn't let the children, I mean, of course, spouses can inherit IRAs without any taxable event. But the IRS has rules even for children who inherit Roth IRAs. They just can't, if they don't need it, they just can't let that grow to the moon without doing some special kind of planning. Is that correct?
Sure.
We will continue our conversation about year-end financial strategies, and you can join us at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.
Window panes, candles gleaming inside, painted candy canes on the tree, Santa's on his way. He's filled his sleigh with things.
That's Frank Sinatra's The Christmas Waltz. Tune into 91.7 or 88.5 tomorrow night at 10 o'clock to hear the special, Frank Sinatra, A Voice in Time, hosted by Nancy Sinatra in honor of his 100th birthday. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. It's December 11th, only 20 days left in 2015, as Dave pointed out earlier. So we're talking about year-end tax and financial strategies. What are some of the things you can do before January 1st to reduce your taxes and save money? My guests are Foster and Motley financial planner and shareholder David Nienaber and financial planner Joe Patterson, along with Chris DeSimio, financial advisor with Wells Fargo Advisors in Cincinnati. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Chris, I think we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about gifting this time of year.
Well, not just because we had a little mini fund drive either. But yes, year-end giving strategies, it's always a good time. And frequently people will use shares of highly appreciated stock to do that, especially if you're not quite sure what the cost basis is. The IRS doesn't care what the cost basis is of shares you give away as long as you do it correctly. And so that can frequently take one question mark off the table and do something good for the community or whichever charitable institution you want to do it through. So you can do that all the way through the end of the year. Just make sure that you've got your I's dotted and T's crossed. There's been another popular technique that is, again, unfortunately caught up in the congressional ping pong tax derby going on right now, because CNBC just reported and major news wires are reporting that the House passed a stopgap bill to keep the government from closing down tonight. It'll be open at least through Wednesday next week, but there are still more details to fill out. And so it's possible for people to make gifts to charity, people who have to take distributions from their IRA accounts because they're over 70 and a half.
The old RMD, right?
The required minimum distribution. Mm-hmm. That if you want to make a gift to charity, you could make it directly through an IRA account. And this has been around for a couple of years, but it's always been one of the very last things that gets passed. And I think we're heading down to the wire again. I think it's done intentionally to torment people who have IRA accounts and their accountants and their tax advisors.
So how exactly does gifting work? Are there certain limits, certain rules around that you have to be aware of?
Well, talking about the qualified charitable distribution in particular, which, of course, as we sit here today, does not exist for 2015, Chris mentioned that is allowable for individuals who are required to take distributions already. So we are presuming you have an IRA, you've reached the age of 70 and a half or older, and are currently required by the government to take money out each year. That limit that can be used, again, if this passes, for that qualified charitable distribution is subject to a $100,000 annual cap. Now, for most folks, they're not going to be giving that kind of money. And what we have done and seen is last year on December 23rd, 2014, when Congress passed the bill that allowed that rule, it was retroactive for the calendar year 2014. So for folks who fit this bill now, who have charitable intent, it might make sense to go ahead and have a check sent from your IRA to the charity of your choosing, knowing that at the very worst, it's going to be dealt with on your tax return, much like writing a check to a charity. The upside, of course, is that the rule does pass. We are allowed to have qualified charitable distributions for the year. And then that never even hits the tax return. And that's the nice thing about that rule is it's though that money was never taken out of the IRA in the first place. So it's a great deal for folks who can take advantage of it. And unfortunately, we have to wait till the end of the year to plan for it every year as planners.
513-419-7100. Let's talk with Sharon in Hyde Park. Hi, Sharon.
Hi. Thanks for taking the call. I have the ability to participate in a 401k plan through my employer, but I do not. If I contribute to an IRA account this year, will I still be able to take the tax advantage of that or not?
Well, there's really no interplay between contributing to a 401k and contributing to an IRA. In other words, the limits don't impact one another. The obvious limitation is having the cash to do both. But there are limits on earnings that you can deduct your IRA. So over certain wages, I want to say something like $150,000 married filing joint. Joe has the tax cheat sheet that I'm not studying too well.
And it changes year to year too, doesn't it, Dave? I mean, it's hard to keep up with this sometimes.
Yeah, depending on your filing status.
Yeah, so if you are a married couple, as an example, filing jointly, starting at an adjusted gross income of $98,000 up to $118,000, you will be slowly phased out of being able to participate in contributing to an IRA. And above $118,000 of adjusted gross, you are disqualified completely from doing that contribution for 2015.
Yeah, and you can still do it. You just don't get the deduction for
That's
it.
That's right.
That wouldn't disqualify her, though, from participating in a 401k.
Absolutely not.
Sharon, did that answer your question?
It does. Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you for the call. Let's talk with Ray in Dayton. Good afternoon, Ray.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks. Go right ahead.
We're both retired, my wife and I, and we have our adjusted gross income is usually less than $50,000. But my question is, we have a few hundred dollars in margin loan interest to a stock company. Is there any way of deducting that without – we don't itemize because the itemizing discount is above what we could get together. So is there any way of benefiting by deducting that margin loan interest without going through the AMT or all that itemizing and that sort of thing?
Boy, AMT in a question, that's always a loaded question. But generally, when you're not itemizing, there's no way to offset that income. The first rule when you have interest expense is you need to at least have enough interest income up to that limit so you can reduce your interest income by that. But really, you have to be itemizing your deductions.
And Ray mentioned it's marginal interest. What is marginal interest?
So margin is when you're buying investments essentially with a loan, that you don't have the money in your account, but you're still buying the investment and you're taking a loan to buy that investment. That's referred to as a margin loan.
Okay, so that's marginal interest then?
It's called margin.
Okay, interest. Okay, gotcha. Gotcha. Ray, thank you for the call. We appreciate it. Again, 513-419-7100 if you'd like to join the conversation. Now, what about the health savings accounts? Is that something else that people should be looking at putting as much into toward the end of the year as they possibly can in HSA?
Yeah, HSAs are becoming a lot more popular now that you're seeing employers trying to control their health care costs by offering a high deductible plan. HSAs require that you're a participant in a high deductible plan. There's certain rules as far as deductibles on what qualifies as a high deductible plan. But yes, absolutely, trying to maximize That I think up for family coverage, it's about $6,500, close to that per year that you can put into an HSA. And that carries forward. Unlike some of the old flex spend plans where you had to spend it by December 31st each year, in HSA, you can keep the balance into future years.
That's a good point too, Dave. I mean, people who have flexible spending accounts, they need to be thinking about this time of year, right?
Absolutely. You go past the optometrist and they're quite busy this time of year.
Guilty.
Well, is there a catch-up provision for the HSA too?
Yes, there is a catch-up provision, and it's different age than IRA. So we're talking about age 55 now, the family maximum. So if you have a family plan covered by an HSA, a high-deductible plan, you can put $6,650 in that HSA account, extra $1,000 a year once you have reached the age of 55. And keep in mind, too, this is kind of like the Roth or IRA contributions. You can do it after the first of the year prior to your tax filing or April 15th. And so for those folks maybe expecting a bonus following January 1st, that money could be earmarked to put in the HSA. And again, that's a nice deal because it's tax deductible funds that go into that account.
Yeah, and keep in mind that these HSAs, health savings accounts, really didn't exist until, 10, 15 years ago or so. They're newer creations. And so you should kind of check them out and look at all. There are a lot of moving parts in them, so you should always, you know, advance carefully. But there are a lot more employers, as you mentioned, who are offering these now, which didn't before.
And with the HSA, does it have to be by the end of the year for it to count for that tax year? Or is that something where you can put in up to April 15th?
You can do it past the first of the year. So again, for folks who may not have maxed out their contribution through payroll deductions but get a nice bonus following, you know, the first of the year, next year can make a 2015 contribution, again, subject to the statutory maximum limits.
Let's talk with Richard in Western Hills. Good afternoon, Richard.
Hi. I'm glad that this is a very appropriate topic for me right now. My sister asked me this question. I'm hoping that you guys can come up with an answer. She has two IRAs, and she is required to take minimum distributions. Let's say she would have a required minimum distribution of $1,500 from one IRA and $1,000 from the other one. Can she take $2,500 from one and nothing from the other, or does she have to take the proportionate amount from each one?
If you can imagine the sound of heads nodding up and down in agreement, but that you just heard that. Yeah, the IRS, David and Joe, is completely agnostic about that. They couldn't care less where it comes from as long as you meet it, because the aggregation rule still applies. Is that correct?
Correct. So you can take the $2,500 in that example from a single IRA. It is different, though, with a 401k. 401ks cannot be aggregated. So if you participate in a 401k plan and you stayed in the plan, you didn't roll it over into an IRA in retirement, you have to take that specific minimum distribution from that account. But IRAs can be aggregated.
That helps a lot. I got to thank you guys so much.
You're welcome.
Richard, thank you for the phone call. Let's talk with Sueda and Mason. Good afternoon.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you.
Okay, so my question is, I have a 401k with a previous employer that I recently left, and I have the opportunity to roll it over now. So would it be better for me to roll it over into a Roth 401k option that my new provider or new employer is allowing? Or would it be better to roll it over into a traditional IRA?
Depends on your tax bracket, would it not?
Yeah, absolutely. So the thing to keep in mind when you're thinking about this decision is those funds in the traditional 401k that from your previous employer were tax deferred. And if you convert those to a Roth 401k, assuming your new employer allows that, sounds like they do, you will owe tax on those funds. So that's kind of the decision we were talking about earlier, is if you think you're in a fairly low tax bracket now and you have some years before you might be retiring, then that might make sense. And just keep in mind that whatever the balance is in that 401k, you will have to report that as income on your tax return and owe some tax on it, again, depending on your tax bracket and current situation. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. So I actually already have a Roth IRA. So would me having that determine how much of that 401k I can roll over?
No, there's no that those are two separate things. You can roll over. You can always roll over a 401k to an IRA, and you could roll it over. It sounds like in your case, your employer allows an old 401k to be rolled into your new 401k. So really, the decision is whether you want to keep it the same as far as the tax treatment goes. Do you want to keep it a tax-deferred 401k, or do you want to take that money as income and convert it to a Roth option? In which case, then it could be rolled to your Roth IRA, kept in your Roth 401k at work, and be treated like a Roth going forward.
Yeah. One thing to keep in mind, too, is that if you roll that over into an existing IRA account that you have, Roth or otherwise, and you are commingling that with other money, then you lose the ability to roll those dollars back into a future employer's 401k. So if you roll it over into some kind of IRA, keep it separate from all your other 401ks to which you've contributed money so you can more easily identify it, because you may go to work somewhere else or your employer may offer more and better options in a new 401k, whether Roth or otherwise, and you preserve the ability to do that by keeping it separate. You lose it if you mingle it with other monies.
Steve.
Okay. All right.
Thank you very much, Sueta. We appreciate the call. And Steve emailed, and he wanted to know if you could explain the difference between the American Opportunity Credit and the Lifetime Learning Credit for Higher Education.
What's the sound of shoulders shrugging instead
not
of
quite
hesitant?
Sure.
It's the sound of I need to get my tax reference book and look it up every time it comes across. But one of them you can use on an unlimited basis throughout your lifetime. And then one is limited to the first 4 years of undergrad, and they come with different income limitations. And for most taxpayers, you have to look at your return under both scenarios to see which one's more advantageous. Some of them can be refundable, some are not. But I apologize, I can't answer that quickly.
But, you know, it's an interesting thought, though. Does it make sense to, if you know you're going to have a tuition bill coming up next month, is there any benefit to, or not next month, but next year? If you know you're going to have a big tuition bill coming up next year, does it make sense to go ahead and pay that this year? Is there some kind of a tax advantage if you do that?
Well, one thing you may want to consider is putting money into a 529. And typically a 529, it's a tax-deferred, and if it's used for higher education, it's tax-free account. Typically, those are most advantageous when you have a long time. If you have a two-year-old that's going to be going to college in 16 years, you can defer that growth. That's really advantageous. But for Ohio taxpayers that participate in the Ohio 529 plan, they can get a deduction on their Ohio return for up to $2,000 of contribution. So if you're going to have a $2,000 bill next year, you could get that deduction on your tax return this year.
What about prepaying taxes? Does that make sense? If you have certain taxes you can pay ahead of time? Joe?
You know, you might see a situation where a small business owner is a great example. You know that you're going to have a big income year this year. Next year, you've had a lot of receivables come in. Next year might be smaller. One thing you can do, particularly if you're paying quarterly estimates, and is look at prepaying some state tax. You know, state tax, for those who itemize, is a deduction on your federal tax return. And to the extent you can prepay it in a calendar year as opposed to waiting till after January 1st to pay your final estimate, or waiting till your tax return to pay your final tax bill due for state of Ohio as an example, go ahead, pay it before the end of the calendar year. It'll show up on your tax return for 2015 as an itemized deduction and lower your tax bill in what might be a higher tax year than next year.
Brock emailed. Now, what's the total limit for a Roth IRA in contributions?
$5,500.
$5,500
per year per individual.
But you've got the catch up
is
well.
Is $1,000. So you could do $6,500 if you're over the age of 50, right. 50 or older.
And no limit on the amount you can convert.
No limit on conversions. That went away 5 or so years ago. So there are some opportunities for, you mentioned, Chris, retired folks who might not be required to take distributions from IRAs, as an example, don't have a lot of income in a given year and can look at taking some money from their IRAs and converting it to a Roth at a very low tax cost.
And I guess Brock's email, to get to his point, he was asking, since it's not, there's no tax benefit up front, I guess his question is, why do that?
Why do the Roth conversion?
Yeah,
sure.
Why do anything with a Roth, I guess?
Yeah, sure. So the Roth is a very flexible tool. You know, with traditional IRA, 401k funds, when you hit age 70 and a half, you are required to take a percentage out each year and pay income tax on it. That percentage grows a little bit each year as you go on. So Roth IRAs and 401k funds, on the other hand, when you have a Roth IRA, you don't have a required distribution at any point. Chris mentioned passing the Roth to your heirs. That's a great tool because they don't inherit a tax liability. They can take funds out or not take funds out, and while the funds are in that vehicle, they grow without any tax impact, any gain, any income tax, and at the withdrawal time, there's no tax on the funds. So it's a nice tool to add to a taxable and a traditional tax-deferred investment portfolio.
So any final words, Chris?
Well, just to follow up on what Joe said, that kind of thing calls for some dialogue among family members. So it's sometimes uncomfortable to talk among children and parents to see how everyone's doing. But if you can do that comfortably, then having this discussion to uncover these opportunities is really helpful.
Dave, Joe, and Chris, thanks for joining me this afternoon.
You're very welcome.
Thanks for having us. Foster and Motley financial planner and shareholder David Nienaber, and also financial planner Joe Patterson with Foster and Motley, and Chris DeSimio, financial advisor with Wells Fargo Advisors in Cincinnati. And as a reminder, the information provided on the show is general in nature and may not apply to your personal investment situation. Coming up, we'll have a look at the art of the brick. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.